I wonder if you could run us through your current understanding now of the histories of Mirodani Plain and the Gusev Crater.
Okay. Let's start with Gusev. Gusev, you get a different history depending on where you are at the site. Out on the plains, where you're still looking at rocks that are probably 3 or 3.5 billion years old, all you see is evidence of volcanism, which put the basalt in place, and then impacts that broke it up. No real evidence for water. It's been cold, dry, and windy for billions of years. Okay. In the Columbia Hills, which are only a little bit older, maybe 4 billion years, what you see evidence for is violent impact processes. Lots of fragmentation, busting stuff up, lots of impacts going on. Clear evidence for volcanic activity as well. Some of it probably explosive volcanic activity. This is a very violent place and a very violent time. Lots of explosions going on, both from within the planet and from objects striking the planet. And then, as these materials settled out onto the surface, possibly while they were still hot, water flowed through them. You might imagine even hot springs. Imagine that you have hot ejecta, stuff thrown out of a crater, forms a layered deposit on the surface, and then it gets soaked in water, and the water flows through it and forms little local hot springs, and that changes the chemistry, changes the mineralogy of the rocks. So it's an intriguing picture where you had this brief, hot, violent, and wet period for a short period of time in Martian history, and then it kind of stopped. Things got buried with lavas, and it's just been kind of cold and dry and very quiet since then. So that's Gusev. Mirodani was the big surprise. Mirodani is a place where there was liquid water beneath the ground. The water was not nice, pure water. It was probably sulfuric acid. It had picked up sulfur compounds from interaction with volcanoes, so you've got this acid water beneath the ground. It flows through the rocks, and as it does, it dissolves out all kinds of stuff. It dissolves out calcium. It dissolves out magnesium. It dissolves out iron. And so you have this acid stuff that flows, and it comes up to the surface. It comes to the surface. It dries up, and it evaporates away, and it leaves salt deposits behind, magnesium sulfate, calcium sulfate, iron sulfates. The wind takes these sulfate deposits, and it blows them around. This forms sort of sulfate sand, and it blows around, and it piles up into dunes. The groundwater is still there. The groundwater might go up, might go down. Sometimes it comes up, and it intersects the surface. One of the things that intrigues me just visually is that this stuff probably really was acid. You go to places on Earth, in fact, here in Western Australia, also in Spain, in South America, there are places where there are these acid waters, and they often will dissolve so much iron out of the rock that they're sort of a ruby red color. So I'm picturing these fields of dunes with these ruby red pools between the dunes under a pink Martian sky. I mean, it could have been a very interesting looking environment. And for long periods of time, there's liquid water beneath the surface and occasionally rising to the surface and then evaporating away and making these salt deposits. It was a very, very strange environment. Mm.
You get the impression there that if you just dig down just a meter or two,
yeah,
in some places look like centimeters, that you will find this bedrock.
In some places the bedrock is right at the surface. In fact, where we are with Opportunity right now, there are these ripples, and the low spots between the ripples are just bedrock.
They're blueberries.
Yeah.
What's the go on those? Your current understanding. When you first saw them, you didn't have a clue what they were, did you?
We had a number of ideas, but what we're quite confident now is that the blueberries are concretions. Concretions are things that form in rocks on Earth, usually sedimentary rocks, that are soaked with liquid water. The water saturates the rock, and dissolved in the water is some mineral that is supersaturated. It wants to precipitate out. It finds a nucleation point, and it starts to precipitate out, and it solidifies, and more and more and more of this stuff forms. And what happens is it sort of adds layer upon layer upon layer, growing this spherical mass in the rock, sort of like the way an oyster makes a pearl. And you get these hard, hard spherical masses called concretions, and that's what we believe the blueberries are.
And how big are they?
They're pretty small. They're typically only about 4 to 6 millimeters in size. So they're not like the big juicy blueberries you get in the grocery store. They're like the little small blueberries that you get when you're out hiking.
Now, your book, Roving Mars, tells a series of incredible tales about personal struggle to achieve the mission approval and then success. Now, what's your favorite tale from the book?
My favorite story from the book, oh boy, that's a hard one. There were some terrible struggles, some struggles that everybody's heard about, the problems with the parachutes ripping, the problems with the airbags exploding, other problems that, you know, stories that hadn't been told before. We had one of our instruments. In fact, if you had to point to one critical instrument and one critical discovery, it was probably the APXS instrument on Opportunity, because that was the one that discovered the sulfates, all that sulfur at Meridiani. And in the final days of testing, right before we delivered all the hardware to the Cape, we had an accident with that thing that was so bad that we smelled smoke coming from the electronics. It was terrible. We were just 100% certain we had wrecked that instrument and that we wouldn't be able to fly it. And then a brilliant German scientist and engineer named Ralph Gellert managed to resurrect that instrument. We call it our Lazarus instrument, because he brought it back to life, and we managed to fly it, and it made that terrific discovery. So, and the whole story of how that happened is told in the book. I think my favorite story in the book is actually just the story of the first 6 weeks in Eagle Crater after we landed. It was a wonderful thing to live through. It was like living every day inside this kind of weird Martian mystery novel, where every day we'd get thrown some new clue. Every day there'd be something. You know, we'd see the blueberries. We'd discover jarosite. We would see strange gashes in the rock that we thought might be what are called crystal molds. And then some of these clues would be just complete red herrings. It really was like being in a mystery novel. And that intellectual challenge of trying to piece together those clues over the first 6 weeks, with the whole world watching us. I mean, every news organization seemed like around the world watching our every move and just trying to see if we can figure this out or not. That was exhilarating. That was really interesting.
And probably at that time, a large amount of the public would be saying, come on, get on out of that crater. We want to see what's over the top of the loop.
Sure, and we wanted to, too. I mean, we're in this little 20-meter hole in the ground, but we knew that the clues that were essential to learning what we came for were in that crater. And I was just confident that if we could figure out what had happened in this place, we were going to be able to have a successful mission. And I wasn't going to leave that crater until we figured it out.
Well, you could see that, too. You know, it's just so amazing that you landed in that crater, given the rest is just,
I mean,
sand for miles.
It was such a stroke of luck. You don't throw a stroke of luck like that away. You milk it for everything it's worth.